everybody.
You're all right. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
You're
I didn't
on.
Know what was happening. You
scared
said something
you,
about
it?
The
ambulance.
Scared the heck out of me. I'll tell you.
On the speakers.
Welcome to Houston, Texas, folks. We're right here at the Sheridan North Houston at Bush Intercontinental Airport, and it's good to have everybody with us here today. And our purpose is to tape the number 100 of the Blind Handyman Show.
That is correct.
Right. And by golly, we're going to do it today. I guarantee you. For the next hour, we'll talk about building, repairing, maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Let's see, our host for the show, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Shaw.
Well, Mr. Tom.
Good to have you with us, buddy.
The big day is finally here, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Don Patterson, where are you?
Right here. And have a good show.
All right. Good to have you with us. I'm Tom Houston, by the way. Thank you very much. The creator and producer, the guy that is the guy that gets the credit for all this stuff. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. Let's have a big round of applause to Phil Parr.
As I said yesterday, it's hard to believe I'm 70% water. It's absolutely amazing. Well, it's been quite a weekend so far. We came on Friday. Most of us got here Friday afternoon, and we've been basically just kind of partying ever since then.
We have.
I've got a hang of the chill, most people. But
gracious.
If I didn't know what caused it, I'd go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
But here we all are, folks from everywhere. We don't have anybody from the West Coast, but we've got folks from Canada, from up northeast, lots of folks on the list, about 25, 26 of us. Jim Martinez from Houston Taping is here with us. Run our show on the Channel 8's subcarrier, Channel 8's secondary audio, and on their radio reading service. Jim Martinez from Houston Taping. Thanks, sir. We did a cooking in the dark yesterday afternoon with Dale Campbell. His mom brought him, and he fed us some shrimp and stroganoff, and we all got full, and we ordered expensive pizzas last night and beer.
Yeah.
The hotel is just, we may do this next year, but we ain't going to do it here. I can tell you that. I think if we do it next year, we're going to do it in Lufkin, Texas. Anyway,
what a deal.
Sir.
Just get a couple of 15-passenger vans and let him drive one and Luann drive the other one and haul you all to our city. We may not bring you back, though.
Maybe that would be the deal.
You might have to. And do this on the porch of the building where we record. Just get some chairs and all sit out there. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. We have all, I think everybody's had a pretty good time. Everybody's eaten a lot. I certainly have. And here we are. Can I go home now? And after a while, we have a treat. Boop is going to play one of the Martin guitars and entertain us a little bit, aren't you?
I don't think so.
She didn't think so.
No.
I told her she could take it to her room. She could take it to her room and play it if she wanted to.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, a gentleman that I had the pleasure of not meeting. Actually, I met him yesterday, but we talked on the phone. He's been on Blind Like Me, and we've been visiting. He's done a lot to help this little gathering, to publicize it and let people know about it. Let's introduce to you a fellow named Bob Bartlett, if you don't mind. Bob.
All right, Bob.
And say hi to everybody. Don, can he use your microphone, sir? If you don't mind. You want to sit in the, you can even sit in Don's chair if you want to, or you can stand up.
No, this is fine.
You want to stand up? Bob Bartlett with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. I'm just delighted to be here, and it's just been so much fun. And I now refer to Mr. Parr as Dr. Parr. A man that can predict weather like that deserves to have a PhD, so we're getting him a pile higher and deeper from one of our favorite universities, the University of Bob.
The University of Bob.
All right. As soon as we get to Kinko's, we will get you your degree. They have a wide variety of wonderful degrees down there. And,
Kinko's.
You promised perfect weather. We've had perfect weather.
We have.
The hotel has generally been okay, outside of the fact they get excited about charging for stuff, I guess. So.
They've been okay. Nice place to stay. The rooms are, beds are good. The service has been well. The restaurant's good. I just like to bitch. Just me.
Well, I tell you, I know Lufkin International Airport was not quite able to accommodate as many of our fellow travelers here as Bush Intercontinental Airport. So we're very, very pleased that you guys came to town. I want to first of all bring greetings to you from Dr. Ed Bradley, the president of the American Council of the Blind of Texas. He regrets that he was not able to be here with us this weekend. He was out of town at a National Beep Baseball board meeting, and since he is the president of that organization, he felt fairly obliged to be there. I think that's only appropriate. So, but he sends greetings, and as I've told folks, we would be happy to have all of you as at-large members or chapter members of ACB of Texas. Just you can go to our acbtexas.org website and find out information there. You can get in touch with Phil. He's got my email address.
I do.
So we have a number of ways of getting in touch, and we'd love to have increase our membership in ACBT as a result of this event. But Doc says, sends his greetings, and he'll be around for the next one, he promises.
That's good.
Also, have talked to a dear friend of mine named Kim King. She is the executive director for the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities. She is formerly in the media, and she understands how significant 100 shows is. And she sends her congratulations and how proud she is to have you, the whole operation here in Houston. That brings me to the other thing that I have to present to you today. As I've told you and mentioned yesterday, I serve the city of Houston as the chairman of the Houston Commission on Disabilities. And I got to thinking about it would really be nice and special to bring forth a proclamation from the city of Houston honoring the Blind Handyman and the Blind Handyman Weekend here in Houston, Texas. So I have such proclamation. I will ask my beautiful wife to please read it to you, Phil.
All right.
All right.
Good.
The proclamation reads, The Blind Handyman Day. The Blind Handyman is a radio show that plays on the Internet radio service of the American Council of the Blind. The show's creator, Phil Parr, and friends Tom Houston, the token-sighted guy, Don Patterson, and Don Shaw record the show weekly in Parr's studio in Lufkin, Texas. The show is broadcast on ACB Radio as well as many radio reading services. The Blind Handyman talks about how to do handyman-type chores around the house from a blindness perspective. The Handyman Guys are coming to Houston to record the 100th show. They will be in the Sheraton Hotel at Bush Intercontinental Airport for this momentous event. The show inspires blind people throughout the world and helps them to understand about available adaptive equipment for doing jobs around the house. The City of Houston congratulates and commends the Blind Handyman on this important occasion and extends best wishes for continued success. Therefore, I, Bill White, Mayor of the City of Houston, hereby proclaim November 7th, 2004, as the Blind Handyman Day in Houston, Texas. In witness whereof, I have hereunto set my hand and have caused the official seal of the City of Houston to be affixed the 7th day of November, 2004 A.D., signed Bill White, Mayor of the City of Houston. Congratulations.
All right.
Phil, the proclamation is suitable for framing, and I hope that when I get up to Lufkin to witness one of these as you record it there, I hope you will have your first project getting home with your woodworking shop is build a beautiful frame for it, because the proclamation really is beautiful. Authentic signature of the mayor of the city of Houston. We're very proud that you came down here to celebrate this event. Thank you, congratulations, and continue to have a great day.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Bob Bartlett, ladies and gentlemen, Blind Handyman Day in the city of Houston, which means let's go fix something.
That's right.
Repair something.
You got it.
That's wonderful, Bob. I appreciate your help and your assistance in publicizing this thing. And, yes, we hope you get to Lufkin and you'll find that. I may buy a frame. But there will be a...
Yeah.
I'll tell you I built it anyway. All right. Let's see. What do we want to do next? Let's ask Linda Justice to come. And Linda works at Home Depot. What was that? Sound like you spilled
that microphone.
Moving this microphone up and down.
Sound like you spilled a drink. It scared me.
Yeah.
But Linda works at John Jessics is with us also. He's going to play some bumper music. Linda works at Home Depot and has for a number of years. And Home Depot is one of the retail outlets that has, thanks to her, sort of initiated a policy of be good to handicapped people or treat them in a better manner than most establishments do, Linda.
That's correct. Yeah, you better be good, because if you have a guide dog, you know what dogs can do.
Yes.
Yeah.
We know.
Yeah.
Okay. This, by the way, has been a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and it's just so great to be here and meet people that you've been communicating with on the internet all this time. It's just, I can't say enough about it. It's great. And you know, I, working at Home Depot, do teach disability awareness to all of our new hires, and have material in our training manual for orientation, which is called Working at the Home Depot, and it shares how folks should be treated if they're differently abled when they come into our stores. Well, here we are as blind, handy men, handy women, handy people,
handy persons,
handy. Never mind. Okay.
Yeah.
Are we handy now? Okay.
I think
we should
handy.
Be, huh? Yeah.
I handed it to you. All right. But the point being that we need to go out there and shop, and how are we going to be treated? You know, the question I asked yesterday when we were talking about this is, how do you feel when you go into a store if you've never been into that store before, you've never been there shopping before? What do you experience a lot of the time?
It could be overwhelming.
That's
really
right,
sure it can.
And the fact that the mom-and-pop hardware stores are gone now. You know, you always went to the neighborhood store to pick up stuff, or you're working on a project around the house, you had to go pick this up, pick that. And so now they're gone because of the inception of these stores where you can go to a Home Depot and buy everything for that project under one roof. You don't have to go to the paint store. You don't have to go to the lumber yard. It's all there for you.
That's right.
All under one roof. But it's huge.
And it's overwhelming.
And it's overwhelming.
It really is.
And noisy. Yeah. And, you know, all kinds of neat stuff going on in there. And scary a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm scared. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Halloween was the other week. But really, you're going to go in there. What do you want to do when you go in there? You want to find help. Customer assistance. Now, you know, even if you're with someone, they may not know a lot of products and things, and they're going to have to find the things.
That's
so it's
true.
Better to get someone who's aware, one of the associates in one of our stores, to help you.
Well, I've decided I'm going to take Dale Campbell with me.
Yeah, he'd be the guy to take along.
He seems to be able to get it done. Go ahead.
That's right.
That he does. He cooking in the dark and cooking without looking and all that. You know, you can do anything when you go to Home Depot, right? But the point is, we've worked with folks now. We tell the new hires when they come in, we share with them how they might want to help us. For example, if you went into a Home Depot and you just happened to walk off the street, maybe you took a cab, maybe one of the transportation things that they have available for you to get to, and you might be by yourself, and you go in there, and you really don't know where to go. Well, an associate should and will come up to you and offer assistance as they would any other customer, okay? And then you take it from there. What do you want? What do you need? And they should be and are trained to guide you through the store and help you along the way.
Yep.
However, some things that you might want to do when you go into a store, if you're in one of our main entrances, all the entrances in the store lead to a register, or at one end of the store should have our contractor sales desk, our contractor desk, where all the contractors go to and they pick up their orders, or they can place orders, or they can do whatever they have to do. There are a lot of folks at that desk that can help you. We have special services desk, which is great because there are folks there too. And if they themselves can't help you, they'll immediately get someone to come and guide you through the store. So you should be able to get customer service right away. If you you need a cart, they'll get you a cart and stay with you through the whole shopping trip. And if you need advice or you want to talk about doing a project, it can be so much fun, especially for these folks out there working, because they think, oh, you know, how's this blind person going to do this project? Well, they're not going to stand there and ask you that, but they're going to be there to guide you through and maybe come up with some ideas and you share together.
That's great.
And it's a learning experience for them too, and it makes them more comfortable in the future, because you never know. You meet so many people from so many walks of life,
yeah,
and this is just another aspect of meeting people. Folks can do things. We can do it. How Home Depot describes it, you can do it, we can help.
All right.
And so that's the whole theory behind it.
I have a question for you. I'm talking about advice before we get too far away from this area. How is Home Depot's phone support? Like if you call in on the phone and you want to know about this fencing material or whatever project
you
happen to be working on.
Yeah.
How well are they trained to help you over the phone? Or anyone.
Telephone sales is really, well, we don't always, we sell over the phone in terms of giving you the information, product information, availability, pricing, and sometimes a bit of knowledge. And if we're unsure, we have to get you someone out on the floor. But we can do a lot of it over the phone, so you'll know whether we have a product in stock.
That's good. Before you take the handy ride to Home Depot, it would be nice to know that you have what I want.
That's right.
And so isn't that, don't you do some of that yourself?
Yes, we do. We'll take your folks call in all the time and want to know if we have something in stock. So you don't have to come all the way there and just to find we didn't have it. Or if we were out of it a couple of days ago, we want to make sure it's in now.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It happens all the time, but it's so important for us because, you know, we have to figure out a way to get to the store and all that. So it's a little, we have to think of these things. But always call if you're
But the operator
call.
On the phone would not know you were blind. You could be anybody calling.
Yeah. Oh,
and what you want to know is, do you have the T111 siding
that I want before
I come to your store? And that's, you know, what you would just kind of wrap up. What I'd like for you to do, if you don't mind, if you have the material that you put in their training manual, can you post that somewhere where we can see it?
Yes, I'd be more than glad to. I'd be more than glad to share it with you.
Just for our own, just FYI, for our own information, the things that a new employee of Home Depot is going to read about, I like your choice of words there, differently abled people.
That's the new terminology, or what the new phraseology.
Is that what you say?
Yeah, differently abled.
I'm differently able. I ain't blind. I'm just differently able.
Well, baby, I'm out of sight, so don't worry about it.
Linda Justice from
Home
Depot, everybody. Thank you, ma'am.
Houston.
Let's take a little break, John Justice. If you don't mind, John is going to play a little bumper music for us, and we're going to take a short break. Be back in a minute with more of our live 100th Blind Handyman Show from Houston, Texas. In Houston, Texas, recording the 100th Blind Handyman Show. It's hard to believe. I remember back when we were sitting in the studio and all of us talking, my God, can you believe we've done 25 hours of this and somebody actually listened to it? Who'd want to listen to us for 25 hours?
We did say that, didn't we?
We sat and talked about
that.
We did. We'll never make 100. We probably won't. We'll never make 100. We'll quit doing this before we get to 100. Well, here we are. We've done 100 hours of something.
Of something.
Thing that we call the Blind Handyman. And believe it or not, we've done 60. I believe we did the 60th Blind Like Me yesterday.
That's right.
And we did it with Dale Campbell, who is the Cooking in the Dark Man.
Right.
Cooking in the Dark Man. And we were... We were sitting at the table. Tim was playing with the computer, and we were just shooting the breeze and talking, visiting after we did the Cooking in the Dark show. And right behind me, Patterson said, Dale, I need some advice on roofing. I've never done this ridge row before, so I want to go through that again. Let's go through that again. Start from the first, Don Pat, and ask your questions of Dale Campbell.
Well, I knew in a former life, Dale was a roofer and roofing contractor. And so I remember just briefly one time in a conversation, 6 or 8 months ago, him talking, and he went into about laying conventional, the three-tab shingles versus the what I call sculptured shingles. And so if y'all listen, y'all know that I've taken on the project of building a garage, and so I'm about ready to start decking the roof, which I can handle. But right in the center, what they call the ridge row, you put a vent, and this allows circulation to vent the attic and keep the heat. And so I am not familiar with what they call a ridge vent, and so I asked Dale, and that was my question to him. Dale, what do you know, or can you tell me in simplest terms so I can understand
ridge
about
man.
A ridge vent?
Ridge vent,
yeah,
man.
The ridge vent is pretty important because it allows the ventilation of not only the moisture in your attic but also the heat to come out of the attic. But what ridge vent makes ridge vent so nice is first it's at the peak of the roof, so it allows for the escape of all the hot air. Uh-huh. Wind turbines, power turbines, of course, are mounted halfway up the roof plane, so that you still have a lot of hot air and moisture trapped in your attic.
Uh-huh.
About 4 feet of ridge vent is equivalent. I'm sorry, 6 feet of ridge vent is equivalent to one wind turbine. So in Patterson's case, he can apply about 20 feet of ridge vent, actual usable space, which would be the same as almost 3.5 to 4 wind turbines on a small roof. But you always need to make sure that you keep your soffit ventilation equal to your ridge vent ventilation, because if you have too much ventilation at the top and not enough at the bottom, you're not going to benefit from the ventilation at the top. But with ridge vent,
there's some ratio that you'd follow. How much soffit vent you had and how much ridge vent you had.
Right. When you install ridge vent, basically you cut, if you already have decking applied and you already have a ridge row, you'll cut about 3/4 of an inch of the decking away from each side of the ridge. So basically every foot you have about 18 inches of square foot of ventilation. So you need to apply that to the same amount of your soffit. If you have a 9x12 soffit, what is that, 108, is that correct? Somebody do their math. 108 square inches of ventilation. So
correct.
You want to keep those two numbers as equal as possible. But when laying ridge vent, there's a lot of different brands out there. There's a lot of different styles. When we were roofing, the type that we used predominantly was a model called Series 4. You could either get it from Amcor, AMCOR was a manufacturer of it, or High Point was a manufacturer of it. It was a one-piece ridge vent. The whole piece itself was about 14 inches wide. So you have basically about 7 inches on each side of your ridge coming down. And with the slope of the roof, it actually protects and keeps water from getting blown up into the attic. But starting from the center out, if you were to flip this ridge vent over and look at the backside, the underside of it, it has a row of probably 4 to 5 sets of fingers, I call them. They're tabs that come down off the top of the ridge vent, and they're just fingers that work as baffles. They're spaced about 1.5 inches apart, and they run. They're set up to where they will keep the wind from driving rain up into your roof. It prevents the water from getting up into the roof. As you come on down to the edge of the ridge vent, it has the actual opening that is set up with a bunch of, it looks like a cage. It's just an opening with a whole bunch of little bars that prevent varmints, bugs from getting into it. It prevents leaves from getting blown up into it. And then at the very edge of it, it has another small flap that comes straight up off the roof plane that, again, is a wind preventative. It keeps winds from blowing rains and stuff up and underneath the ridge vent. But the stuff comes in 4-foot sections, and it already has holes on it that are set up for nailing. You nail it on over the top. You roof set your shingles, roof it all the way up to the edge of the ridge, up to the edge of your decking.
Yeah.
And then you lay the ridge vent on, piece it together, and nail it down with 2.5-inch roofing nails. Once it's laid in place each piece of ridge vent, I guess, they fit together. They've got like a little tongue and groove alignment.
I got you.
So you can line them up really easily.
Like in my situation, I would need 5
right.
of those 4 feet sections.
Right. If you were to, 4-foot sections, and they'll have in with each of them, you'll need 2 end plugs in your case, because they have little foam end plugs
right.
that fit at the very edges. But once you lay your ridge vent, you nail it in place, then you come back with your ridge shingles. shingles. And just like you would put shingles on the ridge of the roof, you install these ridge shingles, which are just three-tab shingles cut down into individual pieces so they're each a foot wide.
Now, can you glue those with roofing cement, or do you nail them?
No,
that ridge? Okay.
Nail them.
And how, what did you always do with the last one?
We would have our crew, if it was a 25-foot roof, they would start and roof all the way from each end into the middle.
Ah.
When they got to the very middle, then you take one three-tab and cut it down so only the colored part of the granules is
shows,
and nail it on as a cap.
Okay.
Over the seams. And then you want to make sure you come back and caulk your nail heads.
Right.
And the same way, if you're putting roof jacks in, lead roof jacks are a lot better, I believe, than those rubber poly...
Right.
The rubber ones that fit down over the pipe, because they don't wear out as well.
Yeah.
The one thing about the lead, sometimes squirrels and varmints like to gnaw on it. You know, so you've got to kind of check those periodically to make sure that there's no water getting in around your pipes. But any exposed nails you have, make sure you caulk it.
Okay.
And caulk them with a mono type caulk that all the roofing supply places have. But that caulk is a lot better than a silicone caulk or any other type of caulking, because it will work with the weather. It'll expand and contract a little bit with hot and cold, so it'll hold up a lot better. But, I mean, anywhere, if you can go out and get ridge vent put on a house, it is much better to have ridge vent put on. When we installed it, now, albeit this was 10 years ago, but we installed it for about $11 a foot. And that was everything. Labor, the whole nine yards, coming out, tearing your old ridge row up, making the cuts, and installing the new ridge vent.
And since it should be cheaper than that, since you're doing a new one.
Yeah, if you're doing a new one, it's a lot cheaper, because they can just bid it into the price. You know, you won't have the old ridge shingles to take out. You don't have to chalk line your line.
I think he's going to do this himself, ain't you, Pat?
I am, yes.
You're going to do
all
it.
All right.
Let me ask you this. When we, about 5, 6, 8 years ago, Pat and I cut a hole in my garage roof, but my wife came home and said, well, you're just ruining the house. Of course, she has no faith in me. But we cut a hole in my garage roof and put in
in the ceiling and inside
in the
sheetrock.
And put a staircase in. This was the first project we did after you moved to Lufkin.
Yeah.
We put in a staircase, and this was February, March, and boy, when the summer came, you let that staircase down and go up there to get, I mean, it's
hot.
I put a thermometer up there, it's 124 degrees. One.
Right.
So I went to Home Depot. We didn't have one, but I went there anyway. it was difficult to do. The only reason I could do that is because I'm differently able. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. Anyway, and I bought some of these little vent things that go on the gable end.
Right.
Little fan.
Little gable fans, right.
And I thought, wow, this is going to take some of that heat out. Well, it took a little of it out. And then I was listening to the home repair guy on KTRH, and he was dissing those fans. They're not good. Don't use them. They're not. But do you know anything about them?
The two things that we kind of shied away from using the power fans like that, either in the gable vents or they even have power like turbines, if you will, is one, they're sporadic. They're supposed to work off a thermostat to come on at a certain temperature, run until the attic or the temperature turns them off, or run on a timer. But sometimes the motors go out. Sometimes the thermostat switch doesn't work, and you're burning electricity. Whereas if you put a ridge vent in, for the price of putting ridge vent in, a power turbine or the power vents are probably half the cost if you had ridge vent installed, say, on a 20 or 25 foot run. But at the same time, the ridge vent is a constant buffer. It's always working for you. And the old adage of covering your wind turbines in the wintertime, you know, is if you live in areas like where Julian is up in Canada, where it's very, very cold in the winter, that's probably a good idea to help hold some of the heat in. But at the same time, you're trapping moisture in your attic as well, which is just as bad. So you want all that to flow out.
I've never thought of that. My father religiously, around the 1st of October, went up there and put on the ends, got up in his attic, and tacked his piece of plastic across his turbine so that he thought that helped.
Not yeah, that it, the old adage does, but like especially in our climate down here with the humidity that we have, it's actually detrimental.
It's not good.
Not good.
So are you going to stop covering yours, Sean? I think religiously he used to.
Cover his?
Religiously.
The idea of moisture, man, as much. Do you know, in Lufkin, Texas, we are about 26 inches ahead on rain. More rain. We've had 26 inches more rain this year than the average in Lufkin.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what they're like in Houston.
We're up high, too. I think in June or July, we were at our average for the year. And we've been just inundated with rain. But then the humidity, too. And it just causes mold and just nasty stuff to happen in your attic.
So if you've covered those vents, you've probably got nasty stuff in your attic.
Yeah. Mold, spores.
Don't go up there.
The mold monster, yeah. But a lot of times, if you do go up in your attic, even in the wintertime, you'll still notice it's usually not, it's not as cold in your attic as it is outside. And then the other adage that we found interesting was the light shingles versus dark shingles. That only makes a difference of about 3 to 4 degrees in attic temperature if you have a white shingled roof versus a black shingled roof.
And the black ones wear a lot better, the darker
the
seem
darker
to.
Wear,
I mean, the colorization. Like if you get the light shingles, they turn dark in places and look real unsightly.
Yeah, they get the mold and the fungus that grows on them. Now, some of the shingles, like with you're using the dimensional shingles, some of the higher grade dimensional shingles actually grind up zinc and galvanized materials and put them in with the granule. And then if you'll notice, like a lot of times on roofs, underneath where a galvanized roof jack is, a metal jacket, underneath it, it looks streaked. And that's where, when it rains, the residue or just the water running down that roof jack runs down the roof, and it actually kills the fungus that's growing on the roof plane underneath the jack.
Okay.
So it's actually, that's the real roof color. The rest of the roof is the discoloration
right.
and the mold and the fungus. But with this zinc and stuff in the granules, when it rains, the idea is it washes your roof every time.
Right. Okay.
That runs about an extra $5 or $10 a square, which if you're doing a big house, that can add up pretty quickly. And depending on what color, if you just go with a darker shingle, you can usually hide that.
Well, yeah, but you're talking about doing it every 20 years.
Yeah, you're not 20 or 30 years, right.
Something you're going to have to do. What do you think about metal roofs? What do you think about
I think metal roofs are fantastic. They're high dollar.
I know they're high dollar. But I think
if you were wanting to do something permanent, if you put a metal roof on, you'll probably never have to replace it in your lifetime ever. Now, my father-in-law has a metal roof on his place, and it's been up there for 25 years with no problems.
Yeah.
Now, the other side, if you do have something fall on it, a tree limb or something that damaged, it's a high dollar repair too, but over the lifetime, the run of it, you just have to weigh out the differences. So I believe a metal roof's about 4 times as expensive as a regular composition roof.
I didn't realize that.
And then the other side of it too is a tile roof. You know, but for a tile roof, you almost have to have your house engineered to support the weight. You know, we went out to do a bid for a guy that wanted to put a 40-year shingle down and then lay tile on top of that. And he said, I've reinforced my attic. So I went up there and looked, and what he'd done to reinforce it was take 2x4s and scab them in to the existing 2x4 rafters. I'm like, this isn't going to work, man.
And they were just 2x4s, so they're not meant to support that.
They're not meant to support that weight either. Right. And he needed to put some braces down to his joices, and it was quite funny. But then we walked out in the garage, and I understood because he had a V8 motor hooked up on a stand, and that's what he used for a hot water heater.
Wait a minute. A V8 car?
A V8 car motor, yes. He'd fire that baby up, and that's how he heated his water.
Boy, that's really fishing.
That's when I was like, crap, I should ask for my proposal back now, because
exactly
I don't think I want to do this
no
job.
No point in messing with this guy.
Ah, the uniqueness of America.
Those sighted people do some weird things. You got to watch them every minute. You have to be really careful. All right, you thought this man, all he did was cook and talk. Hell, he's a roofer. Isn't it wonderful?
That's right. It's great. Great information.
Thanks, sir. We appreciate it. John, let's take a little short break and be back in a minute. Julian from Canada is going to talk with us, and Tim Cummings had a refrigerator project of some sort he's going to tell us about. Back in just a minute with more of The Blind Native.
Thank you.
Houston, Texas, doing the 100th Blind Handyman Show in front of a live, mostly live audience.
Mostly live audience.
Mostly live. Some of us are not doing too well this morning, but we'll get over it, I'm sure, by lunch.
Yeah.
We will. We've had a really wonderful time. Played a little music last night. John Justice is here. He's going to talk with us in a few minutes. We appreciate you, John. And he's going to talk with us in a few minutes. He's a hell of a keyboard player.
And that's right.
He entertained us all well last night. Pat played the accordion, and I made two or three chords on the guitar. And Max Robinson sang a few tunes that he'd written and visited with us. And we just had a good time. It's almost too much fun. It's the most fun you can have with your clothes on. Okay? All right. Julian, pronounce your last name, sir. I always have to get you to do this, don't I?
Pelletier. Don Patterson. Does it the best.
Pelletier.
Yeah. Pelletier. He does it. He said he didn't think you really spoke French. Julian is from, you're from Canada.
Yeah. Montreal.
Montreal.
And I tell you, everyone, this is the best by far explanation I heard so far about ventilating a roof by Dale. This is, he's done better than specialists in Quebec and specialists that I've heard elsewhere. Because you see, what happens is, in Quebec, a ridge is that is very important because of the snow too. You know?
Right. Yeah.
And you see, in Quebec, what happens is that dampness from the house goes into the roof, and then if it's not ventilated, it freezes there in the winter, and then it thaws eventually. You know, we have a bit of summer, although it only lasts a week or two.
Couple of days of hot weather, do you?
When it thaws, ladies and gentlemen, we get rain in the house, and then you know, dishonest roofers will say, "Oh, your roof is no good." They know it's not that. They do it again. And it rains again the next spring, you see. Mm-hmm. So it cost them a great deal of money until they caught on to the idea that you got to ventilate. It's as important as isolating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you that we have named Dr. Phil, and I think that Dr. Phil can fix everything except a broken heart. I'm sorry. And maybe he can.
Well, I fixed a number of those in my lifetime. We'll discuss that after the show.
I want to tell you my tip of the day. It's about, you see, every fall we have a house in Montreal, 25 by 60 by 70 and four levels. We occupy the ground floor in the basement, and we have four tenants upstairs. And I grab a couple of silicone spray cans, and I go around and I spray everything that moves, including the cat and the dog. They take advantage of my handicap now because they're nowhere to be seen my spraying day. I don't know why. And I do it on the hinges, locks, windows. I have wooden windows and aluminum windows. But I wouldn't try it on vinyl windows. Well, as a matter of fact, I did try it and it didn't work. I think chemically they don't go together, because at my summer cottage I have vinyl windows. And
now you're spraying WD-40 or you're spraying silicone?
Silicone on at home on windows, yeah. On the wooden and the aluminum windows, but not on vinyl. Because then I was losing some parts of it when I was spraying. And they were disintegrating or something, you know. So don't try it.
So actually, what happened is it ate the vinyl, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
I didn't have
Dr. Parr to tell me that.
Well, let me tell you.
When I did that?
You remember the first watch that Radio Shack made, little old plastic talking watch. I tell you, I had one of those watches. I put some mosquito spray on my arm, and I swear to God, it ate the back off the damn watch.
Yeah.
You know, if it'll do that to plastic, what is it doing to your skin?
That's it.
Put that stuff on you.
I would like to ask Julian how the dog and the cat fared.
Well, the first time they ran away, but the second time they took advantage of my handicap. I couldn't find them. They were nowhere to be seen for me. I mean,
is that right?
What about the others? I don't know. You see?
Yeah. So you're recommending doing this or not doing it?
I'm recommending doing silicone on wooden windows and aluminum windows.
But not vinyl.
Not vinyl.
Not vinyl.
And about fiberglass windows, I don't know. Yeah. I never had any of those.
Uh-huh.
So. And about Ridge Van, I'm recommending Mr. Patterson. This is wonderful. The best. And Dale knows his stuff. I thought that he knew cooking, but I mean, he's even very possible on roofing.
He's even better on roofing. Julian, yeah. Julian,
right.
CA from Canada, all the way down here from Canada, coming and be with us in the silicone. I don't do silicone. I spray a lot of WD-40, but let me tell you what not to do. If you have a keyboard and you have keyboard and you have put your mic over to John Justice. If you have a keyboard and the keys are sticking on that keyboard and you think, oh, well, I'll fix this. I'll spray some tuner cleaner in there. Don't do it.
Not.
You know, it's like Tomas in the big ditch. Patterson, was it you? Were you with me when we talked Tomas into jumping into this ditch?
Was Patterson the guy that was with you that day? Hey, no way. It was probably John Bennett, actually.
It may have been John Bennett or Lloyd Drennan or something. Don't spray that tuner cleaner in your keyboard because the keys will no longer work if you do. I had a keyboard I was going to bring for John to play, and I sprayed it with... I think this LPS contact cleaner, and three notes didn't work. Scared me.
Did it in.
What my keyboard. Scared me to death. Now, within an hour after they dried out, they started working again, but it didn't help the key sticking problem at all.
I'm trying to figure out how to get it in the microwave.
That's right.
I would
put the keyboard in the microwave had I been able to. I've got a microphone, a really nice microphone in the studio that gets a little dampness in it. Every once in a while, I put it in the microwave 15-20 seconds and bingo, it's all right. I know it's unorthodox. Don't spray that on your vinyl windows. John Justice, how are you, sir?
Oh, just fine. How are you?
You wanted to talk about internet fraud, is that right?
That's right.
All right, well, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay, the reason I'm mentioning this at all is because Don has recently started a little store as part of eBay, and it brought to mind I'm part of a task force for FedEx where I work, and we deal with fraud on the internet every single day. We deal with hundreds of cases where people work through eBay and they put bids on items that are being sold there, and it's not for real. Sometimes your common sense will tell you that it isn't for real, and there's an old adage that says, if it feels like it's wrong, it probably is.
Yep.
If your common sense tells you something isn't right, it isn't. And 9 times out of 10, it isn't right. Now, there are honest-to-God people on eBay and all of the other services, like Don, who are trying to provide a service.
Oh, sure.
Who have something genuine to sell. But let me give you one example of a poor lady from New England who had an original family set of Wedgwood china. The set was 24 service, and it was worth $4,000. Someone made her a bid from Nigeria. She agreed to sell it, and they said they would send her extra money to cover the cost of the shipping. She thought she was in dog heaven, I got to tell you.
I bet
you. So they sent her a check for $6,000. Which would have covered shipping from here to Mars, much less yeah. Nigeria. She took the check, deposited it in her bank, and the perpetrator from Nigeria used the coding on the check to trace it into her bank, got a hold of her bank account information, mm-hmm. and in doing so, wiped out her bank account. At the same time, she shipped this 24-service Wedgwood China shipment into Nigeria. The address was wrong because the person who placed this order never really existed. And we tried to stop the shipment, but by the time we got a hold of it, had it already reached Nigeria. The person picked it up at the station in Lagos, and the Wedgwood China disappeared. she was not only responsible for losing the money out of her checking account, but also for the shipping charges, because FedEx doesn't know what's in these boxes, doesn't want to know, except for customs purposes.
Yeah.
There are five countries that are targeted by the United States District Attorney's Office as being the highest level of fraud. In Ghana alone, which is a country in Africa, last year there was more than 40% credit card failure rate.
Man.
40%. That's almost half. If you sell it on eBay, be very careful. And in some of these countries, if you're selling it, make sure that what you think is the valid credit card information is in fact valid, because it may not be. In this case, the credit card that was used to set up a FedEx account to buy this china and to ship the packages belonged to a guy in Australia who'd never heard of any of this and, of course, denied the charges. Well, naturally, the credit card failed, the account number failed, and the only thing that happened is FedEx was a bit too efficient and delivered the shipment. So the bottom line is this. If you're dealing with somebody and it doesn't feel like it's kosher, pardon the expression, but you know what I mean, it is not. It probably isn't. For example, if you have a store, Dale, and somebody orders 500 of your gloves sets, and they're calling you with a credit card sale from someplace like Togo or someplace, you know, would anybody want 500 pairs of gloves? Well, maybe they might. But before you sell it to them, make sure that what you think is the credit card is really theirs. The advantage is this. You have, in every case of a credit card person, you have what's called a vendor card number, a phone number where you can call to verify that the card information is valid. Now, don't rely on automatic approvals, because these people create identities that are very similar to, but not exactly like, the actual card holder. The result is that one of those little automated machines will approve the card, but it's still phony. If you call a card vendor services, Visa's the one that's getting hit the hardest, but there's also American Express and MasterCard. You call the card holder, talk to them, have them check the card information. If they come back with an address in Australia, you're shipping to Ghana or Nigeria, and you're in the U.S., you know you've got a problem.
Right.
So that's what's going on.
Dale, we can't hear you from back there. We're on the radio. And so come up here. Well, unfortunately, sir, we can't do that right now.
So I wanted to... Dale was starting to talk about a customer he had that had a problem. Dale's a vendor. Don is just getting started in the vending business. With his adaptive equipment, there are hundreds of vendors, people who are honestly trying to make a living. And believe me, folks, not every customer in Nigeria is phony. A lot of them are real, and the country's coming down on everybody like a ton of bricks. They hold shipments now. They run fraud checks on everything that's going in there. The same thing with Ghana. And the bottom line is, there is one thing that's happening, and this I want to warn you guys about, that have cell phone numbers. If you're selling something and you get a call from what appears to be a relay operator that has what's supposed to be a deaf person online,
you've got a problem.
It may not be.
Yeah,
that's true.
The thing is that these people communicate with these relay services through their computers.
Yeah.
The relay people at AT&T, MCI, or whoever don't know that these people are phony.
They don't know whether they're deaf or not.
They can't tell, because the signal they receive is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So here they are sitting in their computers, and these guys will have five conversations at one time.
at the same time.
So they work from one to the other, and they will communicate, and the relay operators are not allowed by law to turn them down. They have to treat them like they're real.
They couldn't ask the guy, are you really deaf?
The ADA.
Not allowed to say that.
You know, what?
Yeah, yeah, that'd be their problem. Yeah.
How did you come up? What were you going to say?
Here's Dale. Yeah,
I had a customer that I was kind of suspicious of at one time because the customer had two different names and lived in this little town called Slippery Rock.
I think I saw her a while ago.
That was good.
Tim Cummings, come up. We're running a little short of time. Tim, you want to walk up here?
Sit down and say a word there, Tim.
Tim is going to demonstrate Gold Wave.
Mr. Gold Wave.
This afternoon. Okay. Tim Cummings, ladies and gentlemen, from Boston.
My mic looks pretty good up there on this
man from Boston.
What a deal, Tim.
Pretty good, I would say.
So you think we ought to buy all mics like that?
I think you should, Phil.
I think we won't. We're going to keep using these cheap ones that I got out of Cracker Jack boxes seem to work fine. Anyway, Tim is an audio man. Tim is the new voice of
Blind Sights.
That's right.
Blind Sights. Blind Sights is something we do on Blind Like Me. What we do is look at websites every week and give them a blind friendliness rating so that if you want to go, for instance, to Sears or to maybe to Home
Depot. Or Blind My Smart, for that matter.
Blind My Smart, for instance.
That's right.
If you've listened to Blind Sights, and I guess we do enough of them, what we could do, and we might do this, is put them all on a CD and just offer them. You know, if you wanted a CD full of Blind Sights, it would give you maybe 50 different websites that you know were blind friendly.
Yeah, really blind friendly sites.
Anyway, what did you want to talk about?
I wanted to talk about refrigerator repair.
All right. Good. A couple months ago,
we noticed that we have a frost free General Electric refrigerator with a freezer on the top.
Uh-huh.
And a couple months ago, we noticed that we were getting water on the bottom shelf of the fridge.
I remember that.
Yes, I called you, and it was getting deeper and deeper, and we'd get paper towels out, and I said, there's got to be something wrong here. So I looked on the Internet, went to the GE website, and they said, well, the problem is that there's a tube that runs down from your freezer into your fridge to drain the water out.
Yeah.
The tube was clogged.
Okay.
So what I did, a friend of mine who's also blind helped me with this because he was familiar with this. We went into the freezer, took out the main shelf in the freezer to get to this tube, and first we sprayed some compressed air from
a bottle.
Bottle, can.
Yeah.
You can get it at Radio Shack in there. And then we poured that helped a little bit. Then we poured some hot water down to try to melt the ice that had formed. That you couldn't even find the hole. It was so covered with ice. You couldn't even find the hole to this tube. It's a small hole in the back of the freezer. And we finally got it melted and poured some water down to make sure that it was running down. And that fixed the problem. And we even had a problem since.
Well, but I think there's a little more to this story. Didn't your wife go out of town while you did this? She said, you're not going to be able to do this. You better call.
No. She came home when I had taken everything out of the freezer and was a little worried that we were not going to be able to.
She was a little worried. We're talking about Cheryl?
Yes.
Yeah. We thought she wasn't. She wasn't real confident in your ability to unstop the tube, was she?
No.
You should have called Max. He's a tube man.
That's right.
But
he's a tube guy.
When I think of the fact that I probably saved $125 or $150, and the guy, sure, it would have taken the refrigerator repair guy probably 5 minutes to do what took me an hour to do. The fact that I saved myself $150 made me feel pretty good.
And you did it yourself.
That you could do it, and you learned some things about your refrigerator. You know a little more about it now.
I do.
Know Your Fridge by Tim Cummings.
That's right.
There is some great satisfaction in being able to look at a project and tackle it. And my wife is less down. Before I met her, anything that happened, she just, you know, if the front door didn't close right, she'd call somebody. Well, who do you call? Front door. Front doors are us. Store.
Yeah.
It's hard to find a handyman guy. But now she's kind of getting into, now it's so bad that anything that happens is my fault. Anything crazy. Phil, you know, how I got in charge of changing light bulbs, I cannot figure out. I do not use them, nor do I give a damn if they're up there.
Or not.
I told her one time, we could have saved a lot of money on this ass, baby. If I hadn't been here, you just wouldn't have put any light switches in because you never turn one off. I've never seen her turn a light off. She's in Vegas. So you fixed your refrigerator and it works fine. No,
it works
more water.
Fine. Hasn't had a problem since. And I think it's actually, too, probably running a little more efficiently because of this. So it's I'm pretty psyched, and it's staying nice and cold, and so it's really working well. So.
You know that there is an adjustment between the freezer and the refrigerator freezer combination is just a freezer with a compartment on it that gets cold.
Yes.
And there's an adjustment that you can decide, how cold you want the freezer.
Well, I'm going to get one of those thermometers that Dale has, and then I'll be able to make that adjustment.
All right.
That would probably work. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah. Put it in the cooking thermometer, put it in the fridge.
Why not give it a try?
Tim Cummings, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, Tim.
Let me just say, we're about out of time. Let me just say thank you, all of you who spent money and put time and energy into doing this thing. And I appreciate all of you coming to Houston, Texas. Give me a report on what you thought when you get home. Of course, we've got the rest of the day to go. And let me know how you think it went, what we could do better, and we may try it again next year. Thank all of you. The Blind Handyman, the 100th show, Tom Houston, Don Shaw, Don Patterson, and John Justice playing bumper music.
Yeah.
Phil Parr, I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw. Well, that was it from Houston, Texas. And it was lots of fun. I don't know if we'll ever do it again or do it again next year or what we'll do. Let me apologize very quickly for the poor quality keyboard. That's all I had. I'm not a keyboard player. And that's all I could find and all I could bring. So the distortion in the keyboard is not John Justice's fault or does not lie with the fault, is not the fault of your set. Thank you much. We'll be back in Lufkin, Texas for the Blind Handyman 101 next week. And we're thinking now about doing Blind Like Me number 100 maybe a year from now. So we'll talk about that later. Thanks for listening. I'm Phil Parr. Bye-bye.